Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
When you dig one grave, dig two. Whenever human beings engage in behaviors that hold others as their enemy, they do so at their own expense. To have an enemy requires one to consciously show hatred, opposition, and desire to inflict harm toward another person. Tonight, welcome to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we will speak from the topic, "Hey, brother, who is the enemy?" We will identify the real enemy as the inner me for all of us. This is an open mic discussion. For our new listeners, this is Talk Straight. This is a national dialogue that we are sharing across America and abroad, specifically targeting certain cities. And you can learn more about that by going to our website, www.bfcinstitute.com, and learn more about our traveling series. The organization that sponsors this is Building Families and Communities, Missions Incorporated, which is a 501c3 non-for-profit organization established in 1998 in Nashville, Tennessee. Our home base is in Nashville, and again, we're endeavoring to go to several cities as a part of our crime intervention advocacy, as well as our educational lecture series targeting at-risk males who are in great need of understanding and guidance and support, them and their parents and their families. We have a local initiative here in Nashville, which is the Parent Empowerment Initiative, working with the local juvenile courts to provide counseling and support to parents and young people who come before the juvenile courts. All right, that's a little bit of background on us. We thank those listeners who have tuned in with us and our callers who call in and share with us in our conversation. Grateful for you to do so. We welcome you, and we honor your questions, your comments. All we ask is that you make it relevant to the conversation and that you show respect for our guests that may be on from time to time and other callers. State your position. We want to hear it, and we will take it for face value and move forward. But we're grateful again for the opportunity to have this national dialogue, and we look forward to you calling. The number call us here on air is 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. Let me apologize ahead of time if it appears that we're somewhat a little disheveled here tonight. We were without power or access to our online environment since 8 o'clock this morning. And so we just got back online at about 5:30 this evening, and we've been trying to catch up and keep everything in order. So bear with us. We may abbreviate our show somewhat, but nonetheless, we will move forward. And tonight's topic again, hey, my brother, who is the enemy? That's the conversation from which we will engage in our dialogue tonight, and we'll begin with our monologue. Ephesians, the 6th chapter and the 12th verse reads, and this is the King James Version that is translated, "For we wrestle not flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I think we can conclude from this text, and I realize not everybody are religious or identify themselves as believers. However, there is a message here. And that is when you realize it as a human being, as a frail person or being, we must realize who the real enemy is. And tonight we're going to speak about that. Quite often our young, as you can see as evidenced by some of the protests, for one reason or another, whether they are Republicans or Democrats, Lives Matter, or some of the neo-Nazi groups or hate groups, some of the things that are done, seems as if young people are of the opinion they must take the position that somebody has to be my enemy in order for me to have reason and cause to live. And this is what we want to talk about tonight. Nobody wins in war, but war itself. The concepts war and enemy are closely associated with one another. In fact, for every war, there must be at least one enemy identified. The greatest threat to humanity. People of all walks of life from all geographical locations, being able to come together, be on one accord, is the emotional drive to treat someone else less than a human, less than a brother or sister of humanity, but rather your enemy, an object of aggression. What I'd like to do in this portion of my monologue is to kind of define some terms here. And perhaps this is what we can focus our conversation on later, are these terms and the meaning of them, the denotative meaning. When we talk about an enemy, by definition, it is someone who is hostile or someone that you are hostile toward or another individual is hostile toward in order for them to be an enemy, feels hatred toward, have reason to oppose their interests for existence, or seeking to exact some sort of injury on them to cause their demise or their end. This is the nature of an enemy. Hence, when we're in war, we find ourselves not having any type of emotion of or trying to spare life, but we're just there to annihilate, to kill. Our U.S. military and other militaries around the world train soldiers to do one thing and one thing only, and that's to kill the enemy. I realize the necessity for armies and for military defense and things of that nature. And perhaps one day we'll get to a point where we can not feel as though it's absolutely necessary for us to be at the brink of war or on guard. You may call this my enthusiasm, my youthful enthusiasm, but one day before I die, I hope to see that. I don't know. We'll have to keep working on that. But nonetheless, that's the nature of an enemy. When we see this type of stuff existing, though, in a neighborhood, and I hate to say it, but even in families, this is where we have a problem. We see it manifest itself in congregations, church groups, social groups, in public schools, in other public venues. People have taken a position that they have an enemy they must seek to oppose and destroy at all costs. That's what their whole life worth is about. Police officers become enemies. Government officials become enemies. The government itself. But most commonly, and we talked about this on our last episode Tuesday, the issue of someone of a different race, particularly when related to engagement of African Americans and whites in America, you must be seen as the enemy. Saying that justifies how I feel based on what I've been through. Now, I want to emphasize some of the factors of one being an enemy that are present and necessary. One is hostility, and it is the form of emotional drive that charges that aggression toward another human being. What did they do to you so wrong that you feel as though everything you're about has to be geared toward or focused on eliminating them, bringing them down in order for you to be someone of worth? Hatred. We hear it all the time, particularly with racial hatred, this enemies that exist in our country where people, and you ask them, what is it all about? Where does it really come from? Especially the younger they are. And what they don't realize is that they pick this up unconsciously from other people, the notion that I got to hate them in order for me to be somebody. I'm black. I've been through a lot of turbulent experience, and it's the white man's fault. I must hate him. He's my enemy. And everything I do have to prove that he's my enemy. Well, the problem with that is a false statement that comes out of often fear and ignorance. Yes, there have been some atrocious things. We pointed out some of those things in Tuesday's show and previous shows. That's American history. You cannot get around it. But today, does that have to be the basis of your dialogue, your communication, and your focus? Does hatred have to be driven? Whites as well feel the same way. Because of what they represent, someone else represent, I hate you. Whether it's a Hispanic or someone of a different religious group or sect, you feel as though we have to demonstrate that we have an extreme dislike, and it causes some dark emotional arousal just to think about you, to face you, right? Oftentimes you direct this hatred against people that did nothing to you, innocent, against groups, entire groups of people. And as I was mentioning earlier, entities such as government entities and what have you, you tend to tear up other people's property just to show your hatred, right? Really, when you look at it, though, and you process someone who says they hate something or someone, what you'll find is their deep-seated feelings of anger, disgust, and a deep disposition toward someone else, and this is hostility that's driven that we mentioned earlier. And oftentimes the anger comes from really not knowing what to expect or fully understanding the circumstances. These are things that we can work on, though. The other thing is the idea that I have to be opposed. You know, we see a lot of that today, even in Congress and people with different political views and party affiliations. President Trump is in office, and there are some people who don't want him to be there. And they feel as though it's their duty to oppose everything that is done from the White House. Believe it or not, when President Obama was in office, there were individuals who had the same idea. I would say they took a different approach to expressing that. They did not turn to violence, and they did not turn to just tearing things up. They did organize themselves from a political platform and form what became known as the Tea Party and send people to Congress, actually. But their opposition was not just totally irresponsibly resistant and destructive. Okay? And then this idea of injury. Because you are my enemy, draw you. Never will forget, I was working in a juvenile detention facility. And one of the young fellas there got into a fight with another one. And they sit at the same table and eat. They use the same quarters to common areas, watching TV, and sit in the same chairs, interact with each other. From time to time, they would talk to one another, share a laugh, a joke. And this particular day, they got into a fight. And the young man went so far off the cuff with his emotion that once he got the up on him, he got him down, he had him down, he decided he couldn't stop until he totally destroyed the guy. He's kicking him and beating him and kicking him. The young man is already delirious and had a concussion. And he says, "Wait a minute, what is going on? What's with you today?" It was not until he calmed down and brought himself to his senses that he realized, hey, this wasn't necessary. But the mentality on the street is, I got to kill or be killed. You're my enemy, and I got to do everything I can to get rid of you. Which begs the question, who really is the enemy? If we're all trying to kill somebody, at the end of the day, all of us going to wind up be gone. And the devil, the author of confusion and war, will be the only one standing. He will have won. But I submit to you today that the real enemy, E-N-E-M-Y, is your inner me, your person. Let me explain what I mean by that before we go to our phone lines. When we talk about the inner me, there are two types of communications. One is interpersonal, I-N-T-E-R, personal communication, where you interact with other people outside of yourself and you communicate on that basis. And the other is intra, I-N-T-R-A, personal communication, where you're talking to yourself. I would submit to you that the real enemy, the real deceiver, the real bloodthirsty, warmongering mindset is the one within us when we allow ourselves to be so angry, to be so frustrated, and to be so taken, with venom towards someone else. It is that inner me that can cause us to destroy everything around us. When I ask myself, how is it that someone in the same family, come from the same parent, can shoot and kill one another? Someone you see every day, you go to school, you grow up with, how do you do that? It is that inner me that is so soiled and misguided that we get to the point where we can bring ourselves to destroy someone else. So I ask the question to our listening audience, who is the enemy? Just who is the enemy? 657-383-0944 is the number to call. I hear we got Pastor Waller on the line. With Pastor Waller, how you doing, sir?
Good, thank you. How you doing there, Pastor Docker?
All right. Welcome to the show tonight. And 1080, how you doing?
I'm doing all right today. How everybody doing?
Good, Brother Charles. Gentlemen, you've heard my monologue. Where did I go wrong with the enemy being the enemy? Either of you have any pushback on that notion?
Well, I'm just actually tuning in, so I didn't get a chance to hear the monologue, but I know you was talking about being killed, you know what I mean? Who's going to win out of it? I got that part, you know. And I see that's a lose-lose situation. If I shoot you down, basically I'm committing suicide. That's what I. That's how I look at it. If I shoot you down, I'm shooting myself down. You know, based on the evidence of where and how far we've come when it comes down to fighting to be a human being, you know, I don't think that, you know, that should continue once a person wake up. You know, I slept for a long time, but I am aware that if I drug you down, I don't win no kind of way. You know, that's what I meant.
You know, that's interesting because one of the unwritten rules of the street is you got to take the next man's house before he takes it out. And that's a scary proposition, brother. You know, when you think about it. Because it puts an individual, especially a young person, and what I understand by social psychology is that you don't fully mature. Your brain is still control your emotions. They don't really mature until after 21, 25 years old for some people. So you tell a young child, young fella, that, man, if you don't get him and take him out and make sure he don't live anymore, you're going to die. That's a dangerous proposition, isn't it?
It's very dangerous.
Very dangerous. You should be killed.
I mean, and this is the mentality often. And I really placated off of our show the other night, gentlemen, with talking about race relations, because this is an aspect of it. We got some young people, every time something happened on the news, and see, they waiting until they hear what happened in the news. Charles, you talk about this, the TV drives their emotion. And where do you see them? They outside, good, face bandanas around their face, they ready to tear up, loot, and just burn anything. Because somebody's got to be there, going to take it out on somebody. How do we turn that around? Somebody, I don't know who that is. Somebody's phone. You got a lot of background. You get a lot of background noise. Okay, that's a little bit better. How do any ideas about how to really begin to address that, gentlemen?
I think he can start with talking and I try to talk about it. And I guess we've got to kind of just know what you're up against. We kind of know what we're up against. We've got to have a different strategy. I don't know if we got to talk about it like one-on-one, but we're going to definitely have to equip our people with a different mentality. We kind of already so far deep in it already is what it is. Now we got to find a better strategy to just to maneuver in the situation and make it work in our favor in the end.
Yeah. You know, and Charles, the thing about it is sometimes we want to point the finger, right? And the truth is it's not just white people that are doing bad things. It's a lot of black people doing some bad things, and even Hispanics, right? The worst thing, though, is when you hurt yourself. Most of the hurt we face is self-inflicted. You know what I mean? One songwriter said, "I never seen a man cry until I seen a man die." You know that? Who killed him? Somebody that looked just like that same man. And you know, I one of the things I said in the monologue, Pastor Waller, where I read Ephesians 6:12, where it says, "If I might repeat it again." For we wrestle not against flesh and blood.
Man, that's
but against principalities. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, bro. I haven't always known it, but I know now, man, that's exactly what we're fighting against. And that's what
we're fighting against. Somebody else.
Huh?
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was saying to you earlier. You know, about if I gun you down, you know, that means that the enemy is using his scheme, his tactics.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? We're supposed to have love one for another. And then we sitting around shooting each other down, not realizing that actually I'm just committing suicide myself, whether I know it or not. You see what I'm saying? Because he said, unless Satan get the advantage of us, we are not ignorant of his devices, which means if he calls us to do that, he's using his device. And that's when you say we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, power. And, man, that's amazing, brother. Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
that's
well,
amazing.
I mean, Charles, you going to say something?
It's kind of tough because I know we can do a better – we can take a different post, but I'm not really sure if I know what I'm up against because I've seen what they're capable of doing. If they repeat the same issue that have been done to us, I think we'll lose again anyway. So,
Charles, you know why I like you, brother, because you're keeping it real, man. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, Charles. This is what you're saying, man. What you're saying is the mindset on the street. You got people who say, I got to stay on guard, but I really don't know who it is. I'm fighting. I'm really swinging at the air.
Yeah.
I don't know who the enemy is. I don't know who the enemy is.
Man,
that's
crazy.
Are we going based off... Stuff out here. It's all about laws and rules. It's like, as long as you don't control the laws or the rules, you don't control the game. Because, like, as soon as we try to form something that happened, they just change the law. Well, okay, if y'all try to do this, we're going to lock you up and call it a terrorist plot or something. They got forms of, as long as we cooperate with language and listening, as long as they got your attention and you are listening, you abide by what they say, then we're going to always lose. We're going to have an opinion or a mind problem.
That's right. So you said, it sounds like you're suggesting, Brother Charles, that we need to be at the table of making laws and policies. Is that what you're suggesting?
I mean, if we're going to all cooperate by Constitution and all this stuff we've been listening to, that's based off, you know, stuff written on paper and our fathers before
us.
And all this. Just, I mean, who started that? You know, who started listening to us?
Wow,
who started listening to this? We shouldn't even be able to understand what they're talking about. We wouldn't have got that far, but it's kind of hard to change that, man, because we know English, we know what they're saying, and they got weapons to back up what they're saying. So if you're not willing to die for it, you might as well not even try. I mean, something's going to happen out of it, I believe, but I know people died before us, though. I like the topic you chose. I still haven't came up with an answer for that, because I know what we're up against is not the same. It's different, man. They'll kill you out here. And I don't think people are ready to die for it, you know.
But some people go in here first on that, y'all, and they don't realize that they'll die before they're successful at what they think they're trying to achieve. And if you ask them, so what is it you want, right? What are you fighting for? What's the battle all about? They cannot really tell you other than what somebody else said. So I said, well, you don't know that, though, do you?
Right.
You ready to go and cut somebody's head off?
Yeah. The people who are important, they stay hidden, I feel like. We'll never know who Uncle Sam is in real life. You know what I'm saying? We never know the people at the top who's making all this, making the stuff happen. Even the president don't know certain people. So, like, man, it's a tough one, man.
Yeah,
I don't think about attempting to fight. It will show that we will lose our life. I don't think they'll take us serious until we wouldn't lose our life. It seemed like.
You know what, Charles? After Martin Luther King got killed and Robert Kennedy. Some folks went to lay down, man. They weren't trying to go out like that.
That's it. We ain't trying that right again.
I ain't gonna buck.
We done came a long way. It was hanging us in trees and stuff. But, you know, they ain't a long way. This stuff shouldn't have never happened. But, you know,
right.
I mean, stuff out here, man, because the more time we don't... All the time we don't wait it, and we just not responding. They done got so strong out here. They're out there building stuff in space. We never even left the planet, so we don't know what's going on out there.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff.
And the dangerous part is the frustrations that your grandparents had and your great-grandparents 60 years ago, the momentum behind that frustration is what we're leashing. When I say we, I'm talking about black folks, are leashing on one another's in housing projects and in socially economically disadvantaged communities. When you see the high rates of black-on-black crime, that's really where that's coming from, man. This despair, this anger, and this idea that I got to get somebody in order for me to be safe. Somebody got to die. Now, that's crazy. But
it boils down to you, right?
You know,
that's a tough situation. Very tough situation there.
That's very tough, man. It's going to be a mess out here. It'll be another civil war out here.
You know, if we're not careful, we'll come to that, though. You know what? And it'll be mostly young people, man, engaging in it. It'd be mostly young people engaging in it.
But I do believe this. I believe this, though, brother, that that the youngsters are going to wake up. I do believe that, man.
I mean,
I have hope.
I really,
actually, with all my heart, I do believe that. And the reason I'm saying that is, you know, if I hadn't seen it in the Word of God, and then I wouldn't even say this, you know, because if you look out on the world and look out on the field and you see all the things that's going on, it seems like there's no hope, man. I mean, according to just that. But just because I myself personally had a chance to hear what the Word of God says when he said we walk by faith and not by sight. And, you know, that, you know, it's a tool of positive thinking. And, you know, if God be for us, who can be against us, you see? And I know that those words, I didn't know anything about those words, you know, when I was out into the world. And I know, and I'm sure a lot of young brothers don't know anything about that. And so it's not, you know, anything that I can say against them simply because I know how it is to be lost. And so, you know, just having this talk, man, the conversation is genuine and it's worth it. And, you know, when you get down to it, and when you stand on what the Word of God says after you have learned, and that's only after you have learned, because you cannot stand on the Word of God if you don't know the Word of God. And that's something that I did not know. And that's what caused me to feel so bad, you know, with what I added to the problem in the community. All the things that I was able to do to accomplish what the enemy was doing in my community. You know, those things, man, are happening right now. You know, it's young brothers are doing things that they really, when it comes to themselves, man, they would say, man, I sure enough didn't want to do that. But I did.
Right.
You see, where do I go from here?
Right.
And that's where we are right now. What do we do right here? And how and what can they make? Can it make a difference? Yes, I mean, I surely believe that it can make a difference, man. So that's hope, and that's
what we have
to stand on.
It's one enemy that concerns me greatly when I speak to a lot of hopeless young cats in the street, and heaven knows I have over the last few years. And that is, Charles and Pastor Waller, the enemy is their daddy. I can't stand that blank blank. Man, if I ever see him, I'm a pop on
him. Yeah.
Man. He don't even exist to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that. Y'all talk to me about that. How healthy is that?
Go ahead,
that mindset, talking about that mindset by itself, it's wild. It's out of control already.
Right.
Yeah, thing rational. It's strategic. It's like chess you got to play. It's like strategic moves you got to make. We know what you can do if you just go and pull a gun and shoot it in the air. We know what's going to happen. But mind is more powerful than the gun because people, I believe some people out here got enough word in them. There's somebody out there that can reach these people. I don't know who the person is, but it can be reached by the right person with the right words, with the right everything. Kind of like how Obama got in the office. Slide in like that.
Okay.
A little bit of everything, you know what I'm saying? Not just one side, it's just overall. It's tough.
You know, because the truth is, of all the frustration and anger they have toward that object or that enemy they made out to be their daddy. The truth is, one day, if you live long enough, you might become the same person. You understand what I'm saying? Then do you look in the mirror and seek to destroy the image that you see? You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Now,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Now the catch is this. I like what you said, Chuck. Who is going to say, I understand where your frustration comes from, but it's misguided. It's based on a fallacy. It ain't real. And if you don't be careful, it will be the very thing that caused you to destroy yourself. You understand
yeah.
what I'm saying? So somebody got to snatch him and answer that question for, hey, look, brother, who is your enemy? The enemy is in yourself. And if you don't control yourself, if you don't subdue your passion, circumscribe yourself with other men and the environment around you, you'll find yourself always at war and in conflict. Always
oh,
at
man.
War and in conflict.
Yeah. Good question. Who is your enemy? And that is oneself. That's I know exactly what you're saying right there. That's so true. I definitely was the enemy, man. I tell you, it's amazing what, you know, a person can be just as innocent as he can be, and all of a sudden, you know, Paul said, have I now become your enemy because I tell you the truth?
Mm.
You know, so you know, it's things that's happening, man, that even when you bring forth the truth sometimes, you know, the enemy can say, hey, man, what you talking, you know what I mean, I'm against you, and you bring him truth. And, you know, things like that.
But the enemy is like, it's like man-made. It's like, it's not even like a spiritual warfare. It's like, it's rules. It's laws.
Mm.
Who can do this? Who can do that? So those things can be changed. Now, why come they can't be changed? Then they will become the enemy. Because they make it seem like the enemy is stuck in stone, and that's just how life moves. Now, this stuff is man-made law and man-made rules, so it can be changed. Why are you not going to change it when they should be? Even God said he don't even remember the things of yesterday. You know, he forgives you. So how can we get a God that forgives you and don't have a system to forgive you?
Mm.
I don't get that.
So Charles, we ain't got to have no beef, man? You mean that we ain't got to be beefing with each other? Man? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, we should better sit down at a nice table and have a simple conversation and be understood and let's move on tomorrow. That's how simple it is. In my mind, it is.
Let me not be rude. 1098 is joining us. Come on, 1098. Well, what about it? We ain't got to beef with each other, dude, 1098.
Oh, no. You know, I have control of my mind, so I don't worry about that. You know, I mean, if you don't have control of that mind, you know, they got somewhere for you. Straight to the penitentiary.
They got someplace for you.
Yes, sir. So, I mean, just getting a hold of that mind, you know, I guess some of us, sometimes, I meditate, you know. I just get me a, you know, get in my little space and where it's real quiet and I think and, if I got a grudge against someone, you know, I sit and I rationalize, hey, that ain't even working, man. Go on, enjoy your day. You know, keep
right.
it moving. You know, don't destroy your
yep.
brother, you know. Not you anyway. You know, hopefully someone, you know, in this path, you know, along the way, would not destroy him. Pray for him. Keep him moving.
Right.
And I'm just going to listen because I'm trying to learn something
okay.
too. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
That's we appreciate you joining us.
I'm listening.
Gentlemen, I have a mark in the middle of my smack dead in the middle of my head. I got a brother that's about a year older than I am, and we got into a little beef. So I threw a tie at him. He grabbed, y'all remember those old chairs that used to be made out of aluminum, and they had the flowers on them, and have you, and they break real easy. Well, he broke that leg off, man, and swung that thing. I didn't even know he hit me. It cut such a clean, deep gash in the middle of my head. I didn't even know he hit me until blood was rolling down my face. And guess what? He didn't realize what he had done either until he saw it. And all of a sudden, he starts freaking out. Oh, you bleeding. I didn't mean to do that. I'm like, what you do? What you do? And there we go. Bang, blood everywhere.
Man.
It's amazing how in some of the most innocent interactions, most of the cats that are locked up, many of them killed people they grew up with, their close friends. They had a problem, did not know how to resolve conflict, and it resulted in the destruction of a life. So their mamas who knew each other, their sisters and their cousins and what have you, growing up in the same neighborhood, there's friction now in the neighborhood because you took mine away from me. I got to have some sort of opposition towards you. These are the type of things that if we don't get a handle on them sooner than later, we're going to continue to hear the news stories all across America about self-destruction. Who is the enemy?
You're talking about black on black. Okay. Now, I see what you're saying. You're talking about why it's a black on black crime.
Well, and when we, like that little white boy Dylan Roof, right, that killed all those people in South Carolina. His whole deal was I grew up mad and angry at the world, and blacks are getting all the credit. They're the ones that the news is always about. I want recognition, right? So I have to make them my enemy and do something atrocious enough to get the attention that I've been desperately seeking. It's a deep thing, man, but like 1098 said, it's your mindset. It's the mind. If your mind is not settled, man, if it's not in the right place, and if you haven't been taught properly, it's so easy for you to get caught up and run out there and go to war with anybody over senseless stuff.
Yes, sir. Without a doubt.
Go ahead. I wanted to ask this question. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was just thinking about, you know, when you deal with the power of darkness, it brings forth more darkness. And I'm not talking about 8 o'clock p.m. I'm not talking about that type of darkness or 10 o'clock p.m. I'm talking about darkness. It's a lifestyle.
Right.
It's also a lifestyle. But it all comes down to which when you choose. Which one would you choose?
Mm.
And that's the thing. Mm. A lot of times, you know, we don't even know that we're choosing darkness, because this is only an experience of mine, so I can't help but to just acknowledge that and say,
okay,
man, I chose the lifestyle of darkness, man, and it taught me something that I never want to go back into that again, because the destruction that's inside of it, you know, it terrorizes, man, I say terrorizes communities. And that's what's happening now. That's why it's time for a great awakening. And I still believe, man, that there is hope. Because when what God says, walk in the light, you understand? And we're talking about what the Word of God says. Not many people know what the Word of God says, and you cannot blame them. That's why someone needs to be out in the field doing what Brother Charles was talking about. You know, believe that there is somebody that can reach them. Because, after all, this is the day that the Lord God had made. So if he made this day, there's nothing nobody else can say to make one believe, that's a believer, to say that you can't change. Because some of those things are just changeable, man. And they just need the right instructions, the right information, and the right people that's going out with a concern. And you'll be amazed, oh, man, what a difference that they make. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, that's a powerful statement. And, you know, I'm sorry, were you going to say something there? Who was that?
I'm good.
Okay, all right. I thought someone was going to say something. I thought about what our caller the other night said when he first joined the conversation. He says he didn't understand what would make me think it was even worth trying to improve race relations. And I think he was sincere in asking this question. What I heard from him is he's seen the efforts fail so many times that he don't know if there's anything that can be effective. But I would submit to anyone who has taken that position, and it is kind of disappointing, man, over the years when you see it and things keep on continuing, it just you kind of have to give yourself an anesthetic and just put it out of sight, out of mind. But when you do that, what happens is you only create a vacuum where it gets worse for the same people who need the change, who need the information. And I would say that, I simply have to say that it's not that it's not possible, as it is we have to change the manner in which we do business with one another.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got to change our attitude. So for one, I'm gonna list three things we got to change. One, theologically, we got to change how we teach the principles of truth from God. because young cats ain't trying to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we've got to change how we instill cultural identity and association, because these young guys got their own way of life, and it's about getting rich or die trying. They ain't trying to hear anything. They ain't trying to hear about no history and origin. And three, we've got to make sure that there is an economic basis for self-sufficient and independent, so they ain't got to sell dope and they ain't got to gang bang, rob, steal, and kill, but they can have an honest living. And working jobs is good, but having your own business is even better in my view. Those are the three things. Change your theology, change your cultural teaching and perspective, and make sure that there's opportunities for economic stability. Did I go wrong there, brother? Somebody give me a
problem.
I like that.
Nope. I
just
like
that.
Amen.
Amen.
That's what I say, amen to it. You know, I'm in agreement with you.
Me too.
You
know, and the older we get, brethren, it seems the less energy and interest we have in putting that work in. It's some tough work. I'm not saying it's easy work. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight. But you got to plant the seed somewhere, right? I mean, and no need of us going, excuse my English, there's no need in us going to areas where young people are doing well. They're responsible. They're responsive to a healthy family environment. They're going to be all right because of their parents. We need to go where there is fatherlessness, where there's motherlessness, where there's dope, where there's gang banging, there is death and destruction. That's really where we need to pitch our tents right there. Not where everything is cool and everything's all right. There's some good children out there. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. But that's not who we're talking about right now.
Right. Good point.
So,
and right on point.
But again, we're talking about the conversation tonight is who is the enemy? And you can give us a call here. We'd love to entertain your question, your comment. 657-383-0944. This is your host, Ruben Doc. We got a good brother in on here, a brother out of Nashville, Tennessee, 1098, a.k.a. Outcast. Brother Charles and Pastor Richard Waller, who's on air with us here live. We encourage others to, I realize that when we bring these topics in this conversation, people may be of different opinions. And the way we grow, I believe, is when we share those different ideas, because it's possible I could be dead wrong. And if I am, I want to get it right, because at the end of the day, we got a problem facing. If the position I take is, if I don't do it, ain't nobody else going to get it. I see a baby in the street, and I see oncoming traffic. I'm of the opinion, I can't wait on nobody else to get them, because if I don't get them, the baby's going to get ran over. That's where I am. And I may be crazy for taking that. My wife sure think I am sometimes. But she'll be all right. You know, pray for it. Y'all pray for
it. Yeah, get stuff done.
But
you gotta
go ahead.
No, I said you got a good one, brother. That's what I said. You got a good wife.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, she's a great lady. I'm grateful for her. She's bless her heart. She's been there 22 years now. And we're going to try to work on 23 if she don't kill me first. But if I don't show up next week, y'all know what happened, right? one of the questions I wanted to pose was along the lines of, now I hear, I was talking to a gentleman who's part of the Black Lives Matter thing, and I really wanted to hear where you're coming from. And so am I wrong? Y'all let me know if I'm wrong. For my advice to him, I said to him that in order for your premise in order for it to be real or to be manifest, you've got to open yourself up beyond just black people, because you're not an island. You don't live in America by yourself. And I understand that the challenge for him is, well, these other non-blacks are going to change the blackness. of the effort and the aim. So what the question is, how real is that? Do you really have a cause or purpose when you put yourself in front of other people, you can't survive. Your identity all of a sudden withers away or dries up. Do you really have an identity? That's my question.
All right. Wow. That's deep.
What do you think about that, though? If you have to, if your whole basis of opposition is about you just totally making everybody else disappear, are you real? You know, did I advise him wrong, Pastor Waller?
No, sir. Listen, what I'm understanding here, you know, and I like that when I get understanding, because not everything I understand, and that's why I seek understanding. Because he said wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom, but in all you're getting, get understanding. And so what I'm understanding here is that I have to have someone else to make me feel like I'm human, or to say that I can live,
yes,
or say that I'm here.
That's,
you know, see those things right there.
Existence.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying, yes, you're right. In order for me to say I have a reason for getting up every day and living and being who I am, you know, it justifies the clothes I wear and the language I speak and the places I go to people. You know, that's absolutely right.
Man, that to me, that's not living to me, man. You know, that's not freedom to me. And the thing is that I shouldn't have to ask no one to let me be free. You know, and this is one of the biggest things that I've learned, man, and I'm going to share this with you, brothers. And I've been dealing with this for a little while, and I've been waiting, I've been watching, I've been waiting and watching and wondering when. If a person know that they're wrong and too ashamed to admit, see, there's power admit when you're wrong. And so if I have wronged you, it should be to my best interest that I stand up and admit that I'm wrong. But, man, that's not going on, brother. That's not happening.
Right.
And
okay,
I've been waiting.
Now, what?
Believe me, patiently, just to hear the words, those words right there. I've wronged you. I've wronged you for most of your life. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to act as if I've never done you any harm. Matter of fact, you're harming me. You see?
Okay.
And that to me is a disrespect.
That begs the question, Pastor. How do you love somebody who you know are dead wrong and won't admit it? How do you love them, forgive them if they won't repent?
And that's the thing, brother. And then they want you to continue. And when I say they, whoever they are, they know who they are. You see what I'm saying? But too ashamed. But I found out that was a man that was very wealthy. This man had done so many people wrong, man, but he stood firm and admitted. He looked to the Lord and said, Lord, he said, I give half of my goods to the poor. The man felt so bad. He just said, I give half of my goods to the poor. And he went on further to continue. You see what I'm saying? And people didn't have no mindset of this man was hurting like that. This man was very wealthy. But then he said, if I've done anything, a false accusation, I give back to those people four times as much as I've taken from them. He was admitting that he was wrong.
Right.
And that's when God began to, you know, the Lord began to just fellowship with you right there, man, because you're admitting when you're wrong. But there are some people that's been harming black folks, man, for many years. What are you talking about, brother? I'm not talking about nothing to play with. I'm talking about some real serious business here. You know?
Sure.
And it hurts, man, when you know that the people know that they have wronged you.
Okay. You Pastor? I've often asked this question, and you all heard me ask it on air here. about the 6x6 room. Remember that, Charles? Charles, you remember that 6x6 room?
I'm trying to refresh my memory on that.
Okay. I asked the question, if you were in a 6x6 room with your enemy, who comes out alive?
Yeah, I remember that. Good question.
Both of y'all should, but I don't take that one. It takes one strong person to make that happen, though.
Say what, y'all?
If y'all, if it's like mine, it's a flip of a coin. But, you know, one person, somebody got, you know, one of y'all got the power to either make it happen or somebody can calm the situation.
That's it. Reason together, brother. You know, because we are very forgiving, man.
Can I suggest something to you? If it's pitch black in that room, and all you can do is feel your way around, you've got to find humanity in one another. You got to say,
man,
that you get.
That's all right.
I like what you said, Brother Wally. You said, if I shoot my brother, I kill myself.
That's it, man. That's it.
Yeah. The fact that we're in this space and the conditions are the way they were says that there's something beyond our control, because something got us here that we could not control. You understand? Are you walking with me? And the 6x6 room is analogous, is representative of where we are in the world. We're in this place, brethren, and we didn't ask to be born here. We did not ask for things to be as crappy and screwed up as they are. But guess what? That's the hand we dealt. We're going to have to play it.
That's right. That's it, brother. That's it, man.
Now, what you going to do with all you got is a deuce and a diamond and a jack? What you going to do with it? Somebody's rolling with two jokers and a king, queen. Come on. 10-8 ain't helping with that.
Excuse me?
Help me with that. I mean, how you going to play a hand like that?
You know, that's a dead man's hand. You know what I'm saying? That's a dead man's hand. There's no doubt about that. But I was, you're not showing more interest in your conversation when you was talking about you was in a conversation with one of the members of the Black Lives Matter. The thing is this. You told him right that black is the only thing that you're going to run on. You won't get that far because all lives matter. Yeah. I mean, you have whites getting gunned down, but basically, you know, the media, you know, they show more of the blacks and what's going on with them. You know what I was saying, Reverend Dockery, with the Black Lives matter, they need to look before they leap. Look before you leap.
Well, I got a question, too. I didn't catch you like that, but how can they supply the tools for you to kill yourself and expect, and then when you kill, then we see people, you know, the crime out here, but they gave you the tool to do it, though. Have these tools not been produced and brought to this country, then how could you shoot somebody if a gun didn't exist? We not making guns in the living room.
True.
They took tools for you to kill yourself. They placed them. This is strategic planning.
They were using trees to kill each other. So, I mean, you know,
at least
the world turns.
A gun don't have no eyes. I mean, a bullet don't have eyes, though. I mean, that's just one of the things. Yeah, I mean, you got to think of
it. I like that. I like that.
They're putting guns right here to get access to
it. Charles,
but, I mean, you know, just because the guns were introduced, that don't mean that we have to use them.
But I'm saying it's making people who weak powerful, though.
Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, cows and cows are running packs. You know, it's real men fight.
Yeah,
you know, they don't fight
killing,
no more, you know.
They wouldn't be ready to fight. They wouldn't be
right,
powerful,
you know,
so they would
guns. Right. And the penitentiary is loaded, you're getting loaded with them, brother.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's true. So, Charles, you raise a great question. I hear what brother's saying, and that is this: there are a lot of temptations out there. What, you know, Pastor Waller would tell you that he was responsible for feeding people's desire and appetite for drugs. That was that temptation too: alcohol, prostitution, You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Hustling. All those things.
Yeah, right.
Here's where I'm saying the real enemy. Here's why I say the real enemy is inside us. Because whatever it is that motivates us to decide to partake in those things, that's the enemy. Because you ain't got to be there.
Yeah.
That's right.
You do not have to be there.
I agree.
I need to cut that TV right now. Then I'd be against a lot of that television.
I love that television. You know, I love that television. That's a learning tool. I mean, a lot of people. Let me state this about television. A lot of people, you know, they can't decipher truth from fiction. You know, a lot of people, they look at movies, you know, for the action. But what always happened to the bad guy? Sometimes the good guy died. Look at your surroundings out here. All these big time dope dealers. Okay, one day you turn around. Oh, they got old so-and-so. Like, oh, man, he got 100 years. Oh, he got 60 years. You know, I mean, it's right. From my point of view, the streets are the television. True. You don't have to sit up in the house and watch television. Hey, it's all around us. The story is being told all around.
Yeah, it's but then if you can understand the television around it, you got to understand why crime and all this stuff is happening too then.
A lot of people don't even watch television and still learn what they learn from the neighborhood. Go ahead, I'm sorry. I don't mean to touch y'all. I'm sorry.
Telling the stove is hot unless they touch it. Now you know exactly what hot is. But just saying hot, you don't know what that word means. Oh, okay, it's hot.
Yeah.
You can't tell the difference between hot and cold until you touch and experience it.
Yes,
we're
talking about kids. We're talking about grown people who have been through the fire already. We're talking about kids. Right. First time experience.
Well,
you have to strong. No second chance. In this life, no second chance.
No, sure ain't. I agree with that
TV,
also. You're right.
Then TV is big then. It ain't small.
Okay.
But you know what's really outstanding, Reverend Docker? These kids 13 and 14 years old, getting these murder charges, they don't let them go like they used to let them go in their 60s and their 70s. You know, they send them away for life.
For life.
You know?
Yeah.
Now,
that's true.
Right. And like you stated, Reverend Docker, the mind is not fully blown until the age of what, 21?
21 to 25, depending on certain individuals. Yes. Yes, that's what it suggested. That you're in the region of the brain that controls impulse, that allows you to say, I gotta stop. No, that's not good for me. Right. It's not mature until. 21, between 21 and 25 years old. That's what the research is suggesting now. And I would submit to you one of the reasons why the law says that a parent is responsible for their non-consenting age children is because they understand children need someone to guide them and someone to keep them safe from themselves.
My goodness. That's powerful there.
It is. But when you think about breakdown, the breakdown of the family and the roles in the family, the father and the mother are supposed to be the primary voices of authority and influences in their children's lives. When that's gone, man, I'm not saying that some children without them don't do well and don't have other people to come in and fill the gap. I'm not suggesting that. But we see too many times where those who don't, what happens to them at the end result. And Charles, I think that's where you're going in terms of you got loose cannons out there, man. No leases on them.
It's grown. You can only be so grown in this system anyway. Yeah, it's grown people in this family, but they up under rules as well. Got to realize this. So they kids, too, to the system. They ain't doing what they want to do.
Wow.
That's a problem.
That's deep right there.
You ain't grown. You just know how to play. You just know how to cooperate. That's why you ain't in trouble. That don't make you an individual. There ain't no personality to it. They're just following the rules. Who are you as an individual, though? Everybody's the same when you can cooperate by rules. We all programmed. We part of the system out here. And what is the main thing?
Wow.
You got to cooperate. You play the game. You're going to be a good slave. Or else you go to the penitentiary.
Hold on. Did you say be a good slave? Wait a minute. Hold on, man.
Yeah, good slave. You're not going to come up against this order. This ain't God, people. The government is not God, people. That's straight devil words. You cooperate and listen to them and stay by their rules. But what they make you? You're not no Malcolm X out here. You're definitely Martin King.
Okay. So now, let me ask you a question, Charles. If I strive to be law-abiding and work within the construct of civil expectation, are you saying that that's what makes me a servant or slave? Or let me be sure I understand you what you're saying.
Uh-huh. And we see right,
Charles,
and we see wrong going on. Uh-huh. Say it again.
No, I was just listening. You were starting to talk. I cut you off. I apologize.
I mean, our kids look up to us. If they see us as grown adults cooperating in a system that's totally that's doing them wrong, man, we just teaching them to be the same thing, power less.
Okay.
Hope. You see what I'm saying? It got to be somebody standing up and speak against these matters like people was doing back in the day, even though they lost their life, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, but them was real. I really believe that was sent by God to say that, even though they lost their life. I don't see that no more.
Sure. You're right. No, you're absolutely right about that. No more sacrifices being made, man. Everybody's trying to keep themselves safe.
Right. You just want to stay safe and just live my life and die at a cool age or whatever. I mean, that ain't – I mean
– Charles, I want to speak to a point that you were raising, and I'm not sure if you did so – consciously or intentionally, and that was the issue of when you operate within the system that we live in, the legal system, legal justice system, does it make you a slave?
Uh-huh.
Now, so here's the thing. Well, hold on one second. Consider this. The framers of the Constitution, Thomas Jefferson, wrote that they hold certain truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by the Creator with certain unchangeable rights. It goes on to say life living. Here's the part that really caught my attention when I read it. And it says, Charles, to secure these rights, governments are established among men. Now, I want to put a pin right there. And it begs the question, how are we governing ourselves so that no one else has to govern us as men? Are we properly governing ourselves so that no one else has to come in and intervene and govern us?
If we would have had our culture, we probably would have. But since we didn't, we got that taken from them, I learned it all over again. Yeah, we probably could have.
Interesting. What do you think about that, Pastor Waller?
You know, I think there's work to do. And just like Brother Charles said, you know, so that means that since we didn't, quote, have those rights by knowledge, and everything. So now we have to utilize what we do have as of now. And the reason I say that, we spend a lot of time, you know, seeking information to fulfill what it is that we need for today. And in doing so, we look at it and realize that it's really not easy. However, that does not take away from what can be done. What we're doing right now is be able to just take what we have today and continue to practice it, you know. And that means we talk it, then we start walking it. You know, and once we start doing that, you see the results. The change is going to take place. You know, it has to take place. Because you're coming into the knowledge and the wisdom. You know, once upon a time, we were stripped from it intentionally. But now, we have a lot to work with. Number one, that we know that in a race, all run. Only one win the prize. So we have to run as if we're going to obtain it. You see what I'm saying? It didn't say we may get there faster than others, you know, because if you look around, we look like we're never going to win. But how can you lose when you put trust?
Wait a minute now. Can I push back on you just a little bit, bro, Pastor?
Yeah, go
now,
right ahead.
Suppose I ran a race already, and I know when I finished in the race, and I'm running to beat my own time. I won, even though I didn't beat the next man. I won still, right?
Right. Understand. I like that.
So it's your
perception.
Mm-hmm. It's your perception of what I need and who, what my worth is, what my value is. You understand? And to that point, Charles, I hear what you're saying. The catch, though, I believe, is so say for instance, grown men in a certain neighborhood, they all sat down and agreed that here is the law and order for our neighborhood. So all of our children, our women, and anybody that walk in this neighborhood have to abide by that. And we're going to make sure that's in compliance with city law, with state law, and federal law. And it's based on our fact, based on the notion that we have a right to establish governance among ourselves. If it's a lie, they wrote it in 1776. Right? Does that give us more power to control ourselves, Charles, under those circumstances?
Now we got to have a place to exercise these things. No, we got the land. Back to the land again. You don't have no place to exercise.
Watch it. There you go, Tom. Watch out, Tom.
Man, I feel we are going with it. At the end of the day, they know what they're doing out here. And I can't play like I don't know what's going on. At the end of the day, if I'm not the source of the matter, man, it's just a debate.
Right. Wow.
They're keeping that power in their hands. They're keeping that power.
Mm-hmm.
They know the true power.
Okay.
You don't have no place to exercise whatever you feel like on private property. Then, they can shut you down at any moment, no matter what you're trying to do, whether you're trying to feed yourself, provide a roof over your head. They control everything. So we can be positive all day. You gotta talk to their source and get them to feel. I wish this broadcast was this broadcast was live around the whole world, so everybody can hear it at the same time. It'd be way more beneficial.
Yeah, Charles, I'm kind of feeling where you're going with this. If you buy your land, you can establish the rule on your land. I'm kind of feeling you on that a little bit, man, because let me finish this thought. That's how you become incorporated as a city. First, you start as a group of people who chart off land that they own, right? Then they establish a rule and a constitution for themselves, and they get backing from the state to allow them to incorporate themselves as an independent city. They can then have their own police to help enforce their rules. They have their own commerce to fund the government and the function of the city and those who run it and so forth. The whole nine yards. Look out for the welfare of the people. Charles, I'm feeling you on that a little bit, man. You're kind of hitting on something there, brother. But now, how many of us want to leave where we are? How many people want
to
leave where they are, though?
Not to leave. I feel like we should be able to talk this thing out. I mean, that's how simple it is in my head. But in reality, I know who I'm up against. We're not the same type of species. It's protect your own. I mean, they're looking out for their survival. They're insuring their survival. We're not insuring our survival because we're cooperating and we listen to them. If we're insuring our survival, we'll have our own military. We'll have our own police. We'll have our own, a lot of different things. We won't be cooperating with somebody who brought us over here for one purpose. I'm sorry. It's not going to work in our favor when we weren't brought over here to be on the same accord with them. That wasn't the whole purpose we brought you out here.
I see. So is it impossible, though?
It's just a revolution. We needed y'all to pick that cotton. Then we got enough power to trade with China. Then we came powerful to buy other products. Now, as you see in 2017, they starting to show that we don't even need y'all anymore. The roads been paved. The buildings have been built. Now, matter of fact, get out of my city. Go somewhere else. You see how they do us? That's the type of people we up against.
Wow.
Our services no longer needed no more to kill us now. Well, they can't do it with guns and blatantly do it because that'll start a war out here. But they still doing it subliminally in all sorts of different ways.
Charles? I'm going to have to be totally okay. Let me be totally honest with you. I'm hearing your basic premise here. I follow you. I'm not sure I fully agree, and I think that some conversation you and I can have one-on-one would help me understand a little bit better. But now, that's interesting. I think you were making reference to what's going on in Nashville with gentrification process. Is that what you were referring to?
And yeah, major and biggest cities like New York as well.
Yeah, all over the country, this happened. And guess what? Guess what? Federal department in large measure is funding that, Charles? It's the Department of HUD, Housing and Development, Urban Development. That's where a lot of those policies are coming from, or the manipulation of them. And guess who's in charge of it? 1098. Guess who's in charge of 1098? It's a black man. Ben Carson. That's who we need. Hey, Charles, we really need to be having some conversation with Ben Carson.
Yeah, we need to talk to him.
Can I ask you another question? Can I ask him one question, Reverend Docker?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Now, he was, it sounded like to me he was saying somewhat like separation. Okay, if blacks have a city, you know, have cities of their own. Question, can he imagine how those cities would be? You talking about crime now. If it wasn't integrated, if cities weren't integrated the way that they're integrated, man, it would be a disaster. Look, let me tell Charles this. I'm a black man. You know, strong black man. You know, I rolled downhill. I've gotten back up. I wiped dust of myself off, and I've kept moving. I've even been to penitentiary. Piggybacking on what you're saying, society don't forget. Well, the thing is this. The laws of the land were put in place. Laws are being made every day. I don't look at where I've been. I look at what I'm coming into. How can I get around this? How can I get around that? I don't rely on white man. Talking about white man keeping me down? No. It's all in your mind based on what he, what the Reverend Docker was saying. Your mind can be your worst enemy. Your mind was, when I got out of penitentiary, my mind was telling me, man, I can't get no job. I can't do this. I can't do that. Well, I have control of my mind. Well, how can I? Look at him. Why don't you go to college and get into something that you know that you can get a job, you know, develop your own job, going back to what you're saying, Charles. See, develop. You know, I'm not angry with society. You know, I don't care if this company won't hire me, that company won't hire me. Hey, I can do something for myself. Like plant again, I have a degree in horticulture. I don't use it.
Okay.
You know, I do a garden. I do yards and things of that nature. You know what I'm saying? I do my own yard. Even in the wintertime, my grass is green if I want it to be green. Hey, who's your yard so pretty? Yeah, you want me to do yours? You know, I'll charge you less than the other company would charge you. But as long as, listen to me. As long as you find fault and blame someone else, you will continuously be in trouble, and that anger will continuously build. Go beyond that. And, yeah, people need to be governed. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm done talking.
I'm saying I feel like we're in this concrete. I still look at it like we're still in the jungle. Yeah, the roads are paved and all that. So now you think you're in civilized society. Now you done forgot the basic law of how to survive. If it wasn't for the McDonald's, can you go catch your food? Do you know how to clean your food and provide for yourself? That's true.
Now he's alluding to Africa. Okay, you alluding to Africa? Hey, they over there starving in Africa, bro. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think he means
the
needy. I don't think Charles is suggesting you move to Africa. I think he's saying that it's possible for you to take better control of your immediate environment and lock down real estate. Is that what you're saying, Charles?
Well,
I'm basically saying you got to be careful taking instructions and going by rules of somebody that's not like you, not built like you, not the same color as you, because they have, you know, it's a different agenda. It's a law opposite.
Incarcerated also. Let me tell you this, Charles. I was working at this company, right? Now, listen to me. I was working at this company, and they had a temporary service in there. One temporary service they didn't run background checks on the people the way that they should have when they brought them in.
Mm.
And it was a white boy came up to me. You know, he said, man, you know, they're going to get rid of me today because, you know, I got a felony and things of that nature. And they didn't run the background check on me. Guess what? Now, this sends a white boy. Guess what? When they ran that background check on him, he was out the door. See, there's a whole lot of untold truth out there that you don't hear. Basically, we in a black environment, and we talk black. You know, a lot of us, we don't get a chance to be in positions to where else that we can experience something firsthand. White folk catching hell too, bro. You got more white people on welfare than you got black. So if you destroy the welfare for the black, the whites coming along too. Why you think they're fighting so hard? Even with this health bill that's going on. Reverend Doctor, hit me on this now. This health bill is going on. All them Republicans jumped up, put Trump in there. Now they're crying because they was on 10 care and this and that and so on and so forth. Hit me on that.
Yeah. Well, it's two sides to that. That's true. One side is it is going to catch a lot of poor whites as well. You're right. It's more poor whites on public assistance just by virtue that they're the dominant population than there are blacks. But here's the catch, though. When Medicaid was started, it's my understanding, they started for women and children and disabled individuals. But what Obamacare did was it gave it to even healthy body individuals who could do something for themselves, right? And that added additional cost because the women and children and disabled people, you don't expect them to be able to take care of themselves. There are barriers there. But it's a lot of people that are able-bodied who could work and do something. Now you get the free deal and everybody else has got to pay for it. That's where the problem came in. But you're right. I mean,
But at the end of the day, yeah, you know, I mean, I get angry when I'm in the store, I'm buying something, and here's a young guy come up with an EBT card. You know, I'm like, wow, you know.
Right.
Rolling in his mouth, talking crap, going over there buying bills.
Right.
Man, I'm working hard every day. I can't get nothing free. You got people working for $7.25 and less than that, depending on where they work. Working at some of the restaurants ain't not giving them that much. Why can't they, the people that's making $7.25 an hour, how come they can't get Medicaid? No, no, you can't get nothing out of you work.
If they don't own no land, my brother, as long as you got to look for work out here on this on this control plane, it's going to always be like that.
Now, you know what, Charles? This will make for a good think tank session among men so that we can work through these. And when we get through working through them, we come up with some sort of guidance for ourselves so that next year this time, we're not facing the same circumstances. That's how you make forward progress. You know, you evaluate your growth and development after you've had dialogue with one another. That's a great point. I think I hope when people archive this show that they will listen to this particular section of the conversation because this is an instructive conversation right here. I mean, this is some stuff somebody can grow from. And I've gotten a few comments from people on Facebook and what have you. Yes, continue to do that because this is what we're talking about. And the truth of the matter is you can be mad. And I hear what 1098 is saying. You can spend your energy being mad at anybody you want to. But when you get through the time you spent being mad, you could have been productive making a difference for yourself. All that energy you put into it, you could have channeled that in a more productive direction. And I think that's where both of you all in agreement in what you're saying.
It's
a tough walk out of it. It's a tough walk out of it, man. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You know, I told my son, you better keep your street smart sharp when you're out there in the streets, man. Because, you know, it's rough out there, brother. But don't walk around in fear. Don't walk around in fear. Do your thing, man. You know you got a right to do your thing and do your thing. Man, look at the time. It's Pastor Wallace,
are we past the
clock, man? We got 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We got 5 minutes, folks. Man, Pastor Wallace, what you doing with the time, man? You
I don't know
Go ahead, 1098.
I just hope that we can get together, you know, all of us once again and sit down and, you know, talk about it, you know, just talk about it, you know. And,
absolutely,
you know,
absolutely,
we can always agree to disagree. But at the end of the day, we all gentlemen. You know,
absolutely,
I learned, you
absolutely
know, from you all, you know, I even charged him, quite sure more than he is, but I learned something from him. Mm-hmm. By the same token, I try to give him something, you know. And
absolutely,
I learned things from you too, Rapper, and I appreciate it.
Well, I gained him a conversation tonight. So I really have. I really have. And that's really where it is. I don't think any one of us have all the answers, but each of us have something that can be the answer for all of us. That's the way I look at it. That's just the way I look at it. So, Pastor Waller, let me. We ain't heard a whole lot from you. Give us, wrap us up here, and we're going to get out of here, man.
Yeah, man, I tell you, man, it's a joy, man, to be able to get information. You know, it's a joy to be able to share where you are. You know, something that I said earlier that I like to elaborate on, and it goes back to the race. Race. All run. It means you got to be in your own lane. Don't interfere in somebody else's lane. Because what happens when I interfere in someone else's lane, I'm out of line if I get disqualified.
That's
And so how to race, see, I had to learn how to run a race because I didn't know nothing about it. I got tripped up years ago by someone else that called me to do what I used. It's called an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were talking about. Once I discovered that it was the enemy, I entered into the race. And I won the race. And what you're saying, Pastor, said, what do you do once you know you have won the race? Then you go teach others how to win a race. You see what I'm saying? That means once I learn how to win, because I don't like losing, I lost most of my life. So what's wrong with being able to admit today I win? So now I need to teach what I know. How did I win? I got in the race. I followed it. And what I mean by that is I was controlled by a drug that controlled my life for 20 years. Somebody might be dealing with that today or something like that. But when I got to the race, ran it, and run it real fast, and then run it real slow, but I ran it according to the instructions that I was given.
Okay.
And then, see me, when you can instruct them in a positive way and they win, then it's the right to go and tell someone else how to win. There's an individual to follow. And that's what I want to share for anybody that's tuned in. Find somebody who knows how to win a race and follow the instructions that you put down, and I guarantee you that you'll win also.
Wow.
That's why I don't interfere in something that I don't know. I only talk what I know. If I don't know it, I don't talk about it. I know how it is to be on TV. I got free from it, so I know how to talk about that. That's why I tell people everywhere I go, if you're addicted to drugs or anything that you're addicted to, I have some simple instructions for you. It's called a book entitled Steer High. Pastor Doctor, you know about that book. You need to be introduced to other people because I'm needing to keep it to myself. So just be encouraged, everybody, and keep doing what you're doing, and everything's going to work itself out.
That's a good segue. I want to encourage our listening audience to go to www.bfcinstitute.com. That's our webpage. And everything that we're about, what we're striving to do is there. Look us up. You'll find on the back page that book, Still Hot, by Pastor Ricky Waller. And every time you contribute to us, he will, when you purchase the book, he will contribute a portion of his funds to BFC Institute to help us continue our show and spread our word around the country here. Thank you all, gentlemen, for joining us tonight. We'll be back next Tuesday night, Lord willing, nothing else happened, and for another episode of Talk Straight. We're going to have the brother out of St. Louis, and it's going to be a debate between legalizing drugs, not legalizing. That's next Tuesday, the 18th at 7 o'clock p.m. Join us here at Talk Straight, and we will see you then.